AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
O'Reilly. Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Tick, 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 boom, shake, shake, shake that room. I am fresh as a daisy on this Meltdown Monday. We have just returned from a beautiful, epic, week-long vacation. I feel like I have dusted the cobwebs off and we are ready to give you the meltdown of dreams. Yes, we are singing it from the rooftops, peeps. Welcome to your Monday. Welcome to the Meltdown, as always. I am your UK rep. My name's Tom Finkill. As always, I am tagging with the finest man in the land, ladies and gentlemen from the good old AZ. Give a big round of applause, a whoop, cheer, and a holler like a yokel to the one and only Brian Clark. Woo!
And he is the three-time UK host of the year, a Guinness World Record holder. He is my tag team partner and the Tomcat of Manchester. As always, thank you for that great intro, Tom. You know, we are dripping in that internet gold on another beautiful Monday meltdown. So just tell me, how goes it this fine afternoon in Manchester?
It's good, man. You know, we've had a great week, as I've just alluded to. We've just come back from vacation, and this is great. So we've just had a little UK vacation, and we're getting ready for an international vacation in the next sort of 12 days. So I'm going to have more stamps in my passport than they are currently in the post office. It's going to be a good week. But yeah, it's been great to relax and chill and just get back to nature with the family and just have a bit of time that I really needed. And just, it's all about recharging batteries, because I am constantly up and down the roads of the UK, and we are putting smiles on faces as we do every Meltdown Monday. We've got smiles on faces to all our wonderful listeners and viewers on the YouTube universe. So it's great to be able to come back full swing, ready to go for another epic week. How about you, mate? What have you been up to this week?
Well, Tom, you know, it's hot. We hit 113 yesterday, okay? And we are cooking in Tucson, Arizona, for episode 18. How do you manage, now you, Tom, how do you manage to have 2 6-foot-6 monsters in back-to-back episodes?
That's like a really good bodyguard segment, right? Honestly, you could walk into any club and you know you're owning the joint.
I think the Tomcat is using some of that Bill Watts booking intuition. That's what I'm thinking, okay?
Well, you know what we say, booking ain't easy, right?
It's not. This week's Meltdown superstar guest was the man behind the paint of a legendary pro wrestling, and he competed in the WCW, XWF, and TNA Impact Wrestling. He is a former Northwestern University baseball player, and upon graduating, he entered pro baseball in 1994 with the Kingsport Mets of the Appalachian League. Unfortunately, injuries ended his baseball career, but hey, thankfully for us, pro wrestling career began. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the Demon, Dale Torborg.
Yes, brother.
How welcome. You doing, guys? Hey, how you guys doing?
Looking forward to having you on here big time.
That's awesome, man. I'm really glad that you guys invited me to do this. And, you know, it's great to see you, Brian. Obviously, it's been a long time, and we have the history behind us from the WCW days. And, you know, Tom, it's great to meet you, and I'm excited to kind of have this conversation with you guys.
It is going to be epic. Thank you so much for joining us. It's going to be a great Meltdown Monday. Now we're going to kick things off and I'm going to pass it over to Brian, who's going to start the conversation, but we're going to keep it rolling and we're going to take everybody on a nice, big, demon encrypted journey all the way through. It's going to be awesome. So sit back, relax and get ready because we've got some games to play with you too. Brian, it's time to you, brother. Let's kick it off.
All right, Dale, you know, like I said, we are excited to have you with us today on the Meltdown. And for all of our pro wrestling and pro baseball fans out there, this will be a fun, exciting episode. Our fans would love to hear your journey in pro baseball and your career in pro wrestling. So let's start with baseball. So tell us about growing up with a famous father in the big leagues, but also your dreams of playing in the pros.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a long, drawn-out situation in terms of, you know, I spent my entire life in the game, you know, because from the time that I was little, you know, you have my dad played for the Dodgers and the Angels. He went from Rutgers University, had the highest batting average in the NCAA at 537. And so he went right. He was the one, I think he was the last one that was before the draft. So they ended up doing the draft the year after. I'm pretty sure it was Rick Monday was after. So he ended up getting a big signing bonus out of Rutgers and went to the Dodgers, only spent a few months in the minor leagues upon joining that, you know, Dodger team that were defending world champions and, you know, probably shouldn't have been in the big leagues at that early age. But Don Drysdale and Sandy Koufax and those guys wanted him. You know, right out of college. I mean, you spend 3 months, 2 or 3 months total in the minor leagues. That's just insane. And so, but he ended up being with that Dodger team. And so, you know, I wasn't born yet. I was born in 71. And, you know, this was 1963, 64. Parents graduated. Both of them graduated from Rutgers in 1963. And so, you know, the Dodger era for him was amazing. He caught Sandy Koufax's perfect game. Don Drysdale scoreless inning streak. So, you know, he was an absolutely amazing athlete, amazing catcher, and, you know, didn't hit the way that he would have liked to have hit back then, but again, didn't have quite the seasoning that you normally would have in pro ball if you had gone to back to double A or triple A to kind of get your, you know, your bat working. But, you know, he had an amazing career. My kind of first memories were of Cleveland Stadium. He was a coach and manager with the Cleveland Indians back in the late, mid to late 70s. So my memories really kind of start there. And it was a great life. You know, I spent a lot of my life traveling. You know, I ended up playing professional baseball. But before that, I had gone to Northwestern. So, you know, my dad, he was the manager of the White Sox in 89, 90, 91. I went into Northwestern in 1990 to 94, and then went and played pro ball with the Mets, as you alluded to, with the Kingsport Mets. Got drilled in the face with a pitch, and it's actually was shown on VH1, did a show called Fan Club about, you know, Kiss and the whole gimmick with the wrestling, and I was on there, and they showed me getting hit in the face with a pitch. I did not realize at the time my depth perception was messed up. When it hit me, it broke my cheekbone. And I had no idea. I just realized I was like, man, I'm struggling judging changeups. I always struggle with breaking balls in terms of the curveballs, but you know, changeups I didn't have an issue with. And then all of a sudden I'm going, man, I know the pitch is coming. I can tell he's going to throw me a changeup, and I still couldn't judge it. So I got traded from the Mets to the Yankees, actually in the middle of a series, and they tested my vision when I went for my physical the next year in spring training. And they did the chart, and they're like, you know, where you have the depth perception chart and it's the fuzzy dots. And the last three, I said, there's nothing on the last three. They're like, look at it again. I looked at it again. I didn't see anything. And they're like, oh, we need to send you for testing. Put the dye in my eye, that, you know, that yellow dye in my eye. And they said, you know, your depth perception is almost gone in your left eye. And I kept trying to play, opened up my stance so that I could look more with my right eye. You know, the left eye was the eye is dominant in terms of being a right-handed hitter, but I tried to open up. Then I was susceptible to breaking balls away. And, you know, I wasn't a prospect for them. And so not being considered a prospect, having, you know, getting traded over, having this injury And that ended up taking me to the journey of what, you know, basically ended up happening, getting into the wrestling world, because Northwestern was playing in the Rose Bowl. My college roommate, Jeff Shine, was an outside linebacker. He was playing in the Rose Bowl. We fly out, my buddies and I fly out to the Rose Bowl, and I'm actually on the same flight with Hogan. And he introduces me to Macho. And I just remember, I mean, you know, Brian, you were around him a ton. Macho, the first time I meet him, you know, everybody does a Macho impersonation, and I'll do what ended up happening for me is Hogan goes, "Hey, Randy, I want you to meet somebody." And this was at the baggage claim at LAX. He goes, "I want you to meet, this is Dale Torborg." And he goes, "Torborg is your dad, Jeff." And I'm like, I lost track of what he was saying for a second, because in my head I'm going, that's his real voice. Like, this isn't a put on. And I'm like, snap out of it, dummy. Like, he's talking to you. And like, here, listen to what he's saying. And he tells me an unbelievable story. Cause I said, yeah, I heard you were in the minor leagues with the Reds and the Cardinals, I think, and even the White Sox. And he goes, yeah. And I go, were you pretty good? I said, I heard you were pretty good. And he goes, "Oh man, I was all or nothing, brother. Home run or strikeout." And so we start talking. He goes, I said, "Well, what happened?" He goes, I hurt my shoulder, my throwing shoulder. And he said, I ended up thinking my career's over. He threw 1,500 balls a day left-handed to come back as a left-handed first baseman. And if you talk, talk about intense. That might be the most intense individual I've ever been around. And to have that work ethic to get yourself back into pro ball by being a left-handed first baseman.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
It shows you what kind of personality and drive this guy had. And so with them talking to me, you know, Hogan was friends with George Steinbrenner. I had known Steinbrenner my entire life, well, from the age of 7 on. You know, he was great to us when I was a kid. And that's how we started kind of talking and saying, you know, about baseball. And then they said, "Hey, you're a pro baseball player. You have the size. Have you ever thought about wrestling?" And the somewhat standing joke of my teammates, because they knew I was a little warped. I was a huge Kiss fan growing up. You know, they were like, "You should be a pro wrestler with your personality and your size and all. You should be a pro wrestler." And you're kind of going, yeah, okay. Yeah. And it wasn't until meeting those guys, because that was a whole world. I had no idea how to enter. It was what I saw on TV. So I had no idea how you would get into the business and how that all worked and everything. And so with them talking to me about it, right, and then seeing Hogan, and I'm not taking anything away from Hogan, I just remember looking at him the first time I met him going, he's not as big as I thought he was. But again, this was 1995. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't the Hulk Hogan I watched as a kid at my buddy Brian Martin's house as a kid, where he was larger than life. And yeah, he was what, 320, 330 back then. And he was probably what, 275 and 95, if that.
Yep.
So it put it from being what I saw on TV to reality going, maybe this is something that I could do. And so that's really what got things rolling. And then I couldn't stop thinking about it. Then I knew I was done mentally with baseball. And it's like, okay, I'm going all out for this. And I remember sitting at my parents' house. I was visiting in their house in Sarasota. And Carlton Fisk, the catcher, Hall of Fame catcher, was hanging out with my dad. And here I'm watching you guys on WCW Monday Nitro at my parents' house in Sarasota. And I said to Fisk, I said, that's what I want to do. And Fisk looks at me and he goes, are you serious? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I love this. I'm like, well, you need to come out with me as the Iron Fisk, you know? And so we start talking, and that's when it broke the ice with my parents. My mom goes, ah, yeah, I think you'd be pretty good at that. My dad's looking at me like, you want to do what? And so, you know, as it progressed, then I started, I trained with Warlord and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. So if I was ever stiff with anybody, you can blame those guys. Because just, you know, those two were, you know, I will tell you, Neidhart beat the crap out of me the first day. And actually the first 2 days, we trained at his house in Land O'Lakes, Florida in the summer, outdoors. And I mean, I get slammed one time and there was a little scorpion on the mat. Then there's snakes slithering underneath the ring. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, this is crazy. But I'm like, I loved it. And so, but Neidhart gave me, as soon as, Brian, you'll understand this. Neidhart used to do this. And the faster he would do this, you're like, oh no, I'm in big trouble now. The more he did this with his beard and the faster it went, you knew there was an ass kicking coming up. And I took 30 shoulder tackles in a row on my second day training with him. And so, but I, you know, I came back and it wasn't until probably three days in is when they finally said, okay, well, we're going to show you some stuff now. It was that test, you know, it's different now than it was even then. And it wasn't that long ago, but that was the test to see if you had the guts to keep coming back after, you know, a major ass kicking.
Wow. What a story. What a story. And what a class. My Lord above. Imagine having those as your teachers. Jim the Anvil Neidhart and the Warlord. Again, there's two peeps that you could walk into a club with and be quite confident that you can go wherever you want. Well, speaking
You're
of
not
tests,
kidding.
I'm going to give you a test right now, Mr. Torborg. We're going to give you our first shout into our game show beauty. We are going to lay on the line with a little Mount Rushmore. And before we put a nice big bow on baseball, I'm going to invite you, and then I'm going to invite Brian to give us your Mount Rushmore of baseball legends. Dale Torborg, over to you.
Oof. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Is it more personal?
Got to be personal. Got to be personal.
Yep.
All right. So I have to do this as, you know, as my idol growing up and, you know, still is my dad. So he's going on as, and I don't care what, if people disagree with me, they can, you know.
It's all about you, well, man. Well, it's all what you think.
Yes. We'll leave it at this. So it's, my dad is number one,
yeah.
And I'm going to go my idol in terms of baseball and growing up was Don Mattingly. To me, you don't get any better than Mattingly. As a first baseman, you know, he just was, you know, he was those Yankee days. He was everything you can possibly imagine. I mean, the guy has to be in the Hall of Fame. I know his career, because of the back injuries, were shortened, but this guy deserves to be. When you see what eight game consecutive games with a home run, what he did for those Yankees in those, you know, the 80s and 90s, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I will go to my grave saying that, and I hope they put him in because he definitively deserves it. In terms of pitchers, because of I'm going to go with Nolan Ryan.
Oh.
And this is going to be, again, Torborg-centric Mount Rushmore.
That's all right.
I'm going to say for the pitchers, right-handed pitcher would be Nolan Ryan, and then the left-handed pitcher would be Sandy Koufax. And it's amazing to think that my dad is the only person ever of anybody to play the game to catch both of those two, let alone – he caught a perfect game from Sandy, and he caught Nolan Ryan's first no-hitter. So there's my Mount Rushmore for me personally, and I'm going to stick with that.
Well, knocked it out
great.
Of the park.
Yes.
Absolute greatness. Right. And from speaking from a British layman, we don't get baseball over here. I've heard of all four, including your dad, which is amazing. That's so cool. Right, okay.
Oh, thank you.
Now, Brian, the game that we play here is to see how many we can match up because Brian's already written his four down. I think, because I'm on a winning streak right now. I'm on a winning streak. I don't want to be staring up at the ceiling again. I've saying one out of the four you've got matched.
Okay, well, again, we always pick these with different sports, whether it's baseball, football, or wrestling. So we change this up each week. For me, I went probably old school, maybe too far old school, okay?
That means I've lost.
So, you know, Tom will do the job occasionally, and this may be one of those weeks.
After you do the first one, let me try to – because if they're in the same era, let me see if I can get any of them after you tell me your first one.
Let's okay. Go. All right. Well, you know, like Hogan is our guy on the Mount Rushmore wrestling, I went Babe Ruth baseball.
Just okay. Because,
yeah. So who else do you think I have?
Now, that's a tough place to start, right?
I'll tell you what.
Yeah,
I'll
that give you, is, yeah. Is Mickey Mantle one of them?
No.
Wow.
I'll give you 60s, 70s, and yeah, 60s, 70s, 80s. How's that? That might help.
And 60s, 70s, and 80s.
How about if I give you a city?
Help. Okay.
All right. Atlanta.
Dale Murphy.
Hank.
Oh my Hank gosh. Aaron. Yeah. That's where
there's just went so many
the
choices,
two greatest
man.
Home run. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So no, that's where I should have made the correlation between the, you know, the 755, the two home run kings.
I grew up watching that and Hank Aaron when he was breaking the record. You know, it was such a huge thing. So I have Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Cal Ripken, Willie Mays.
Willie Mays was my dad's favorite player. Yeah. Willie Mays was... my dad said Willie Mays was the greatest player he's ever seen in person. He just said, bar none, he was the best player he's ever seen. And I will tell you, this is kind of a side note, but I have been working for the last few months on a documentary with this guy. He's out of Chicago. He did this. It's called Last Comiskey was the documentary that he did about the last season at Comiskey Park. His name is Matt Flesh. He's a filmmaker. And we are, it's almost, I mean, it is literally, before I came on here, I was watching the last edit.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
That we have one more edit, and then it's going to the sound and fixing the color and everything, and it will be done. It's a documentary about my dad, and it is spectacular. I know I'm saying it because, you know, I was part of it, but it's amazing because you have interviews with, Ron Guidry to, you name it, the people on there. It's absolutely incredible. But dad tells a story about Willie Mays digging in, you know, and he's going to face Don Drysdale about how tough Don Drysdale was at being, you know, 6'6", you know, 230 pound pitcher on the mound and just completely intimidating. But so nobody dug in on Drysdale. You know, their cleats in the dirt. They never dug in because you're going to get plunked. If you do that, you're getting drilled. It doesn't. It is what it is. You know, it was a different time back then and an era for these guys because the Dodgers used to have a code that one goes down of ours, two go down of yours, and so they it was a completely tough, different era. and than it is watching games today. But he tells a story on this documentary, and he talks about Willie Mays digging in and then forgets that it was Drysdale on the mound, calls timeout, fills the hole back in, steps on it like, I'm sorry, I forgot who was on the mound, and Drysdale still drilled him.
Wow. Classic.
Yeah. Completely different than it is now, that's for sure.
I definitely would like to know when that comes out, man. And if we can do anything here to help promote, I'd love to. I'm sure you're it's already big time, but I would love to see it and share some of those that on our show. That'd be wonderful.
I would love it. Yeah, we'll be on YouTube. We'll, I'm hoping it will be done in it, because we did the first one for my dad's celebration of life. We did the first edit. We made it in time for that, and it's completely different. We have about 8 more interviews with Ryan Dempster, Kevin Millar, the MLB Network guys, and you know, like I said, Guidry and all these guys did it. So there's like 8 different interviews from when we did the celebration of life in June. So it should be done in a couple of weeks, and I'll send it to you, because I'd love for you to see it. It's great.
Yeah, love to see that.
We would love to promote it. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
What an amazing job you both did. Once again, I'm staring at the ceiling. I've taken the loss. I've jobbed it out again. Just right on my boots, pin me, pay me, and we're happy. We're all good. Excellent. And seeing as we're talking about your dad, each week we give a big shout out upstairs and dedicate the show to fallen heroes. So let's raise a glass for the legend that is Jeff Tulbuck. Boom. Here we go.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So let's take a segue away from baseball and into the world of professional wrestling. And I just want to just throw it out to you really easy, really simple, and you can give us your beautiful history with the particular topic. Let's talk, obviously, about the Demon and about Kiss, and give us the backstory. When did you first hear about it? What was talked about? And how did it all come apart?
So, you know, I was at the power plant for a while. As Brian knows, I remember watching these guys. They would come in, you know, Canyon and Glacier. So Chris and Ray and Brian and Ernest, they would come in, and we were watching them do some crazy stuff. I remember you guys practicing at the power plant, doing that up on the shoulders. I'm like, oh my God, how is this big son of a bitch Brian gonna do this? I'll tell you what. And we will, I know I can get long-winded, but we will get back to the Demon character. But I don't think that people understand until I tell people all the time. Then I was about, I think I was 6'6", 260 legit back then. And I was considered average. Remember that? And I'm like, to watch you guys, I don't think that you, any of the guys that were in that group, with you guys, you know, the Wrath, Mortis, Cat, Glacier gimmicks, realize how big all of you are, like in Ray and how big Ray, and my gosh, about how agile and unbelievably talented Canyon was. I mean, this to watch you guys bump around, I just sat there and I was like, I honestly don't think anybody has any idea the size until they meet you in person going, my God, look at the size of this dude. And then, you know, you dwarfed Ray, and Ray's a big guy, you know? So it's like, and to have that punishment and to be able to time things in the ring like you guys did. I mean, my hat's off to you guys. Were absolutely incredible watching you guys. And we learned a lot at the power plant watching you guys go through this and the dedication and going through and DDP being down there, and the guys would show up every now and again to work out with us. And, you know, that was priceless information for us. But to kind of go back to the Demon character, we got to go and touch on, you know, your former tag team partner, one of the nicest people, one of the classiest, great dudes in the world of pro wrestling, and Bryan Adams. I mean, what an awesome human being. Yeah, man. Awesome, awesome human being. And, when I first heard about the gimmick being a possibility, there was rumors going around that Kiss was involved. Now, I was a Kiss fan. I I mean, I won a lip sync contest, and I can tell you the small world of that at some point through this. And I won a lip sync contest in high school. We did one, and I was of course Gene Simmons for that. And you know, I loved Kiss since the age of five. My brother Doug brought the Destroyer album home, and I just stared at that thing. And when they went off to school or they were at practice or something, I would sneak into my brother's room and listen to the Destroyer record, and then I would go back and listen to the first Kiss record, and then I just was hooked. I was hooked on the visuals. I was hooked on the music. I just loved that band in general. And so when the opportunity came about that Kiss was going to possibly do a character, I mean, I was all in. I mean, I just absolutely was like, I've gotta try out for this somehow, some way. What happened though is I ended up doing a match that I wasn't expecting to do before this. So Chad Fortune and I were the pit crew at one point, and they had us at the United Center in Chicago. We were doing tag matches on Worldwide, and that was out of Orlando. So we were doing those, and we were actually doing the tire carrying stuff for NASCAR when we had the Busch Grand Nationals car with Lance Hooper was driving. So he and I were doing the tire carrying thing and doing matches. We had, you know, had matches with like Tony Carr and Ciclope and, you know, bunch of different matches through Worldwide. And so the whole time we were doing tag matches. So we're at was at Nitro in Chicago at the United Center. And Goldberg comes up to me and says, "Hey, good luck tonight." And I said, "Oh, we have a match." And he goes, "It's not we." He goes, "You have a match." And I'm like, "I have a match." And he goes, "Yeah, you have a singles match." I go, "Thought we were doing a tag match." Well, they ended up, it was Kendall Windham who I was wrestling against, and Terry Taylor said, "Do you have any other gear besides this NASCAR thing?" And I'm like, "No, I didn't know we were planning on doing this at all. You know, like I thought we were, if we were going to do a tag, that this is what you wanted." So I wore that because that's all I had. Do the match with Kendall Windham, and I blow my knee out. I dislocated. I don't know if you were there for that, but I dislocated my kneecap and it was on the wrong side of my leg.
Oh, I
Yeah.
don't know if I was there or not, but that sounds rough. That's,
It
yeah.
was nasty because when they took my gear off, they took my knee pad down, and Disco actually almost threw up. He was standing there and saw it and was like, "Oh my God," because it looked so deformed because it literally shifted and went to the other side of my leg. And I do remember one thing I was proud of was I hear like a real deep voice coming in and said to Mickey J, was the ref, said, "Was he screaming?" And Mickey J said, "No." He said, "The only thing he said is when I went to raise his hand and like, you need to stand up." I said, I can't." He goes, "You can't." He goes, he said, all he kept saying is, "My knee's messed up. My knee," because I didn't know what was wrong. I just said, "My knee's messed up." And so the guy that asked that question was in the Blackhawks training room, came around the corner, and it was Big Show. And Big Show goes, he goes, "Tough break, man." He goes, "But I give you," he goes, "I give you credit because I crawled over to make the pin with my kneecap gone." And he goes, "I give you credit for finishing the match." He goes, "Good luck, brother." And they took me to the hospital, popped my knee back in. So I was on the shelf for 6 months. Because I partially tore the meniscus, partially tore the ACL, and broke the kneecap. Had to have part of the kneecap taken out, reattached, and that's when I went back. So this is the tough part of this story. It's great, but it's tough at the same time. So we hear that this Kiss gimmick is happening. It's my first day back at the power plant. First day, I just get cleared. I go to the power.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Our plant. So I'm kind of just testing the knee, like feeling it out, you know, kind of just not even doing a match or anything, just seeing how it feels. Yeah, I've been on the shelf for 6 months. And Brian, you remember at the power plant, the old one, it was like, it was a dump. And it was
I've been to all three of them. So yeah.
Okay. So it was technically the second one that you would know was probably the one that was like an old carpet warehouse.
It was an old carpet warehouse. Yes.
And you, when the phone would ring in the front, you could hear it because they had it, you know, blaring through the speakers when the phone rang.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So the phone rings, and they remember they had like a, they must have had an intercom too. And the phone rings. I had only been at the power plant for maybe 45 minutes at this point. Phone rings, goes through, don't think of much about it because the tryouts and everything used to do it there. So they had a phone to ring all day long. Mm-hmm. This one, though, Jody Hamilton comes on the intercom and goes, Dale, if you're here, I need to see you. And I'm like, oh, no. Because in baseball, if you get injured, they won't release you until you're healed. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm getting released. I mean, that was the thought. I'm like, I'm getting released now. I came back and that was it. You know, here we go. I go into Jody's office and he goes, that was Eric Bischoff. So again, your heart drops to your stomach going, oh boy, I'm done. So he goes, Eric wants to see you in his office now. And I said, okay. And I said, do you know why? And he goes, don't worry, it's good. And I'm like, sure it is. You know, they just want me out and I'm done. Like, get your stuff, get out, you know, type of thing. So I go down there and Janie Engel, she's yep. like, hey, hang on. Eric wants to see you. So I sit in Eric's office and he goes, how you doing? I said, I'm doing well. Thank you. You know, you're very respectful. You know, you're toned down and because, you know, you're talking to the boss, you know, you're not up in his face. And, you know, I'm like, I'm all right. He goes, so I hear you just got cleared recently. And I said, yeah, I go about an hour ago. And he goes, you just got cleared an hour ago? I said, yeah. I said, I was just in the ring kind of testing to see how my knee was holding up. He goes, well, here's the deal. He goes, have you heard the rumors about the KISS thing? And I said, yes. And he goes, are you interested? I said, absolutely, I'm interested. I said, Gene Simmons was one of my idols growing up, man. And I go, absolutely. You know, I said, I don't think there was a Halloween I didn't go as Gene Simmons. I'm like, yes. And he goes, well, here's the deal. And this was on a Friday. He goes, we had the pay-per-view on Sunday in St. Louis. It was, wasn't Slam, Great American Bash, maybe it was. So the That's pay-per-view possible. Is, yeah, I can't remember exactly which one. He goes, pay-per-view is Sunday. You're going to have a dark match to see about this gimmick. And I'm thinking, I haven't done anything in 6 months. And he goes, I know you haven't done it, but listen. He goes, if you want this, you're going to do it. And he goes, you better show me something special. And I'm thinking, oh my God, is my wind going to be okay? I mean, ring rust of 6 months. I don't know how this knee is going to handle everything. And he said, is there somebody at the power plant you would want to work? And I said, yes. I said, Johnny Swinger. I said, if I can get Johnny Swinger, you know,
yeah, Swinger, yeah.
What a terrific dude, great human being, but great yep. worker. And yep. I said, I would love to have Johnny Swinger if possible. And so he goes, reach out to Johnny, make sure he's available, get him here, do a match. And he goes, and seriously, he goes, you need to show me something special. I said, yes, sir. You know, go out, call Johnny. Johnny meets me down at the power plant. We talked through a match for maybe an hour, hour and a half. We didn't really do anything because, you know, it's at the end of the day. And so I told Johnny, I said, listen, man, I said, I don't know how this knee is going to hold up. I said, I think if this is going to go, it's going to go on a drop kick. And I said, let's not waste anybody's time. Let's lock up, push off, and I'm going to drop kick it and see if it holds. And I said, because if it doesn't, we're wasting everybody's time. So we had a 10-minute match in St. Louis. It's actually where I met Christy for the first time at the Avis counter. I had never met her before. She was waiting at the counter. Nobody was there. And I walked up and I knew she was with WCW, saw her on TV. And I said, are you need a ride or anything? Are you good? I introduced myself. She's like, oh, no, I'm fine. Thank you. I remember walking away from that. And Johnny goes, I said, man, I said, I don't know what I was expecting. They go, man, she was really nice. So, and for those that don't know, Christy is Asia. And so, and we've been married for, we'll be 25 years in October. And it's her. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
It's her birthday today.
Big shout out from the meltdown. Happy birthday. We were not going to let that slide. Yes.
Awesome. Congrats. Awesome. So we go to do them. You know, now I'm in St. Louis getting ready to do this. Brian, I'm going to tell you guys, I was never as nervous before or since than I was for that match. I mean, I couldn't keep a thought in my head straight because I don't feel prepared. You know, when you go in for a test and you don't feel prepared, you're nervous to begin with. And then plus, Kiss are my idols. Gene Simmons is an idol. I want this more than anything. Absolutely want this more than anything. And so I'm backstage getting ready and getting ready to do this. I'm already nervous, like I said. So I'm getting ready to go out. Music's playing. It's nothing to do with Kiss because they didn't want to tip off anything, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, I'm going out. And as I start to walk, Bischoff grabs my arm and pulls me back. And he goes, because again, they didn't want to tip this off. He goes, I want you to do Gene without doing Gene. And I'm walking going, what the hell does that mean? And I'm walking out there going, you know, don't do Gene without doing. And I went, I can't think like that. I go, I won't stick the tongue out. I'll just kind of try to capture the essence of the demon Gene Simmons character that I've known so well. So go do that. Johnny and I start it, drop kick. My knee's fine. Boom, go through it. Great match. 10 minutes. Go backstage. Bischoff standing there. And he goes, I go, how was that? And he goes, you got another job you can go to? And I went, I guess I'll have to. And he goes, no, you did great. He goes, you got it. I want to see you in my office on like Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday or something. I said, okay. He goes, Janie's going to reach out to you. I want to get all this stuff solidified. Great. Pumped up, call the family. You know, I got it. You know, I was so pumped up, right? So don't hear anything Wednesday. Don't hear anything Thursday. We're going out. Glacier and I are going to go out to the opening of the Nitro Grill. And that opening of the Nitro Grill wasn't that much of a positive. If you remember, Eric wasn't real happy with it. It just wasn't up to his expectations. Well, he's there. So I walk, I think this is, we were supposed to do Wednesday, Thursday. This was like Friday or Saturday in Vegas. And I said, Eric, I go, do you still want to see me about the demon gimmick? And he's looking, he goes, turns to me and goes, no. And I was floored. I'm like, okay. And I just kind of turned away from the table and walked like, what just happened? So what ended up happening is from what Andre Freitas, AFX, told me is that they showed pictures. It was because Canyon did the makeup, Brian Adams did, and myself. And what ended up, they showed Gene the pictures. And he points at my picture and says, this one looks the most like me. But he goes, who's the biggest? And Eric said, well, Bryan Adams is, you know, over 300 pounds. And his vision of what the demon at first was, he had been watching the WWE and loved the Kane fire and red and the black and then, the, you know, all of that and that size. So he wanted somebody like that. So Bryan ended up getting it. And I was thrilled for Bryan. I was crushed. You know, I was literally, no pun intended, but I was crushed by, and but when they did it in Vegas, when they debuted the gimmick, I was trying to help Bryan with the mannerisms. I said, you know, I've done this forever. So I tried to show him how Gene moved and all that. And so, you know, I was doing the best I can to help Bryan at that point. And then a couple weeks later, Bryan had done cut a promo like on Vampiro the next Monday. And he was like, he found out, I think, that there was no licensing money, no nothing to do this gimmick, and that there was a lot of politics.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Tick's involved in that gimmick. And he called me and he goes, hey, just to give you a heads up, Bryan, this is, calls me and goes, just to give you a heads up, I called WCW and told him I'm not doing that character anymore. And he goes, this is what Bryan told me. He goes, you picked the wrong guy to begin with. Dale should have gotten it from the beginning. Dale needs to have it now. So, you know, he goes, don't be surprised if WCW calls. And I said, okay. I mean, it wasn't 10 minutes later that J.J. Dillon called me and said, hey, this is the deal. Are you interested? Because I just started doing the MVP gimmick. Just started right. Doing it. I did a match with Maestro. And then the next one I was going to do was on a Thunder, and they had me booked for it, but then they asked me, they said, do you want to do the demon gimmick, or we'll push you, you know, in the MVP gimmick, which one do you want? I'm like, I couldn't turn down the demon gimmick. So I lost the next match to Horace Hogan and MVP was finished. And then I took over, and you know, and that's when I started to do the kiss gimmick, the demon gimmick. So that's kind of long-winded version of, but that's how it transpired.
But that's a, I mean, too bad for the MVP side of, because that look was it was really good. I mean, solid. It just had a great vibe to it. But I understand how you would not want to turn down the kiss gimmick, because you. I was telling Tom pre-show this. I said, no one, there is not another person in pro wrestling that could have done that gimmick better than you. Hands down, there's nobody even close. I spoke to him earlier today about that. That's just a fact, man. You were perfect for that. So.
Oh, man. That means a lot coming for you to begin with. And, you know, I love doing the gimmick. The MVP gimmick that I love too, but it was interesting, the MVP portion of it, because the original Warlord was the first one that suggested, he goes, you need to do a baseball gimmick, man. He goes, you look like one, you move like one, you are one. Yeah. And he goes, you ever see the movie The Warriors? And I go, oh yeah, Warriors come out and play, yay. And the Baseball Fury, right? And I have all of these. It's kind of a weird thing that it seems to come full circle. Guys joke all the time, oh, you're like the, you know, real life Forrest Gump, because somehow something comes back to you with a weird story. So I'm trying to come up with the baseball MVP gimmick. The MVP stood for the most violent player. I got it copyrighted. I got it trademarked and all this. So we already touched upon that Neidhart and Warlord trained me. Right. And so I come up with a White Sox uni, you know, that's black, silver, and white, do the makeup. And I did kind of Gene Simmons. If in essence, in that baseball fury look, right? So I do the AWF is trying to start up. It's that fledgling group, I think, out of Minnesota. And they had everybody from Bob Orton to Coco Beware, Road Warriors, you know, everybody was, you know, that wasn't working for the WWF at the time. They were all doing this, right? So I'm only trained two times a week for 2 months. That's it at this point. They're like, we're going to do a dark match. And, you know, we're going to put you in a dark match. So I have a singles dark match. And it goes over really well. Like, it was a very simple match because I didn't know anything else, you know? Like, my big move was a body slam, and, you know? It's like, oh, yeah. You know, I was green as they come. But I really worked the gimmick. And all of a sudden, I'm watching the AWF was on. They had gotten a TV deal. And all of a sudden, I'm watching their show, and here I come. So it was supposed to be a dark match. They never paid me anything, right? They air it. And this was one of those things, and I know this is a very positive-driven podcast, and I love that about what you guys are doing. But it shows you – Warlord had smartened me up enough to go, hey, man, protect the gimmick. He goes, this is a really good look. Protect the gimmick. So I went – friends of mine are Metallica's management. Peter mentioned I've been friends for a long time. And I asked Peter, I said, hey, listen, I said, I need to do this with this gimmick. And he turns me over to their attorneys. So they trademarked everything. They trademarked, copyright, did everything down to the makeup, you know, and it was no loophole type gimmick. You know, these are real deal attorneys. So I get a call from the AWF, and they said, yeah, we like what you did on this gimmick, but here's the deal. I'm like, oh, here we go. And I'm not going to tell you who it was. It was a WWE Hall of Famer talking to me at this point. Says, here's the deal. You're not ready to do this gimmick. You need more seasoning. I said, I agree. And I said, you know, I'm going to keep working at it and all that. He said, but we're going to take that gimmick and put two other guys in as a tag team. I said, what do you mean? I go, if you want me to get more experience, put me as one of the guys with somebody else as a tag and let me learn. And they're like, no. The names that supposedly they had told me was Wayne Bloom and Steve Kern were the guys they wanted to put in the baseball, the MVP gimmicks. And I said, no, I said, I came up with it. It's my creation. I'm going to do it. And I need the experience. And they said, well, you have no choice. I said, what do you mean? I have no choice. And again, I was so young to the business that I wasn't intimidated because I'm like, I'm just saying, no, you know, I came up with this.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you have no choice. We aired it. We own it. I said, good luck with that. I said, Metallica's management and their attorneys trademarked it. And this person goes, who told you to do that? I said, it doesn't matter who told me to do it. It's done. I own it. I literally own the face paint, the look, the name, everything from MVP to the most violent player. It's mine. It's registered. I go, you can look. It's registered under my name. And the person goes, really? He goes, do you know what you're doing? You're committing career suicide by trying to do this. And I said, so be it. I said, but I'm not, that's my gimmick. And if you don't want to use me, he goes, oh, well, we're not using you. And I said, well, you're not using my gimmick either. And I said, so, and he goes, well, you know, you're done in this business. I said, oh, okay. And I was naive enough to go, whatever, man, and hung up and called Warlord. I called Terry and I said, hey, you were right. Yeah, I'm glad you smarted me up to that and tried to steal my gimmick. And so I ended up going over to India using the MVP gimmick, and I wrestled against Bam Bam and Bad News Brown was great. Terrific. Bushwhackers, you know, so I started getting my experience, came back and met with J.J. Dillon, showed him my pictures. And he goes, I saw this. Where did I see this? I said, AWF. He goes, yes. And he goes, how long have you been trained? I said, well, that match, I was only trained 2 months. He goes, what? I said, yeah. I said, I still don't know what I'm doing. And he goes, let me get back to you. Called me back and said, we're going to sign you to a training deal for the power plant and sit back, you know. And one who really tried to help me through the whole thing was Medusa. I had met Deb when you guys were at St. Pete. And she introduced me to Sonny Ono and was like, this is a really cool gimmick. And then, you know, I was really excited, signed, and they said, we're going to send you the power plant. And then I just remember seeing Sting with the black and white face paint and a baseball bat. And I went, uh-oh, that gimmick's done. And that was when I knew, you know, okay, I'm going to have to come up with something different. Stayed at the power plant, did all that stuff. And then we ended up going with the black and red, which is that action figure back there. We went with the black and red and, you know, changed it up.
What an incredible transition, right? I mean, what a legendary story. You dug your heels in and it all came to fruition and everything positive came from that. So that we're always about telling positive stories, mental well-being, good mental health. So do it. If you believe in it, go out there and do it. Don't let somebody tell you you can't. Don't let somebody take things away from you that you truly believe in your heart is yours. No matter how green you are in any business, believe in something, hold on to that dream and shoot for the stars. Go for it. Love that story.
I'm so glad you guys are doing the positives of the side. I mean, it's so easy to go negative. I mean, I know negative seems to sell, but I love the positives. And a guy that's doing amazing work, like Brian, Mark Merrow, I've gone to a bunch of his speeches, and this is a guy that's really, he's saving lives. I mean, it's just incredible. So I love that you're going with the positives. And you know what's interesting is, I knew, you know, I was a lightning rod of hate for a while.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
On the internet, right? Because of the whole KISS fans didn't like it that KISS was doing something in wrestling. The wrestling hardcore fans didn't like that KISS was marketing into wrestling. And it was, you know, the early onset of the internet. And I was getting destroyed left and right. And it's like, okay, it is what it is. But I was getting destroyed left and right. But I will tell you, on the positive note, some people are like, oh, it's rah-rah. No. If I knew ahead of time I was in for an uphill battle doing the demon gimmick. I knew it. They told me I lose my first match against Terry Funk. And, you know, I was thrilled to be able to, you know, have the honor to get in the ring with a legend in Terry Funk, you know, but at the same time, they were sitting there telling me, we're going to have you do the job. And this is the day, technically it was not the debut. My first match as the Demon was on a Saturday night show that aired the next Saturday after that Thursday. So the first match I actually had, Rick Cornell, who played Reno, Reno, put me over in that match. And he's one of my closest friends. And he, I told him when he had volunteered, I'm like, no, dude, this is a squash match. No, I don't do it. Don't volunteer. He's like, are you kidding? He goes, I'm doing it. And I'm like, oh, gosh. But, you know, so that was technically my first match. But it aired after that Thunder that was out of MGM Grand and when I lost to Terry Funk. But they had told me, this is a classic story. So Kevin Sullivan tells me, you're going to be doing us a favor by doing this gimmick. But unfortunately, you drew the short straw tonight. You got Terry Funk, and you're putting him over. I said, yeah, no problem. I was a little confused, thinking, man, this is the debut of this gimmick, and I'm like, there's something ain't right. And I'm like, okay, I know. And he goes, listen, here's what we're gonna do. You're gonna fulfill this contract. We're gonna take you out of the gimmick later and put you, and we'll push you as the MVP. And he goes, you're going to be under makeup. No one's going to know who you are, right? So Terry Funk, this is at MGM. Terry Funk throws me out. I hit the guardrail. Boom, down I go. And some dude leans over and goes, hey, Torborg, you about ready for a pinch hitter right now? And I looked up at him, and I'm thinking in my head, yeah, no one's going to know who I am. Like, you know, it just struck me funny. And the guy used a baseball reference of needing a pinch hitter at that point. I was like, you know, after hitting that guardrail and taking some, you know, neck breakers from Terry Funk, I was like, yeah, I probably do. So, yeah, that was all transpiring literally in that first match.
How did you not break character in that moment? How did you not just corpse at that?
I don't know. I just in my head, I'm just looking up at him. I had those red contacts and looking up like, yeah, no one's going to know, huh?
Amazing, amazing. Well, we're going to get back on track. And speaking of positive, it was Eric Bischoff who was very, very positive on the Demon gimmick. It was his baby. He'd gone to town on it. He'd contacted Gene. He'd gone through all the motions. And was this the time when Eric had gone from WCW and then to be brought back in the April? Because it seems to me, from being a fan, is that when Bischoff wasn't there, the gimmick wasn't as high as when he was. And then when he came back, then you got put into that incredible feud with Vampiro. So let's talk about that.
You're right. The reason that, you know, they beat me all the time early on, and the reasoning behind that is that they wanted to make the Bischoff deal look bad. I mean, they wanted Eric to look bad. And there was so much crap flying, to be honest with you. And they had told me, we're not going to use the God of Thunder music anymore. And I said, why not? And they said, because it's costing too much. There's so much misinformation about the whole, how much Kiss got paid, all that. It's not true. And they had told me, we're not using the music because it costs $10,000 every time the song is played. So I knew the Kiss camp. And I said to somebody in the office, I said, is there any way you can send me the contract? I actually have it. It's in a drawer. I still have the faxed contract that Kiss signed with WCW. And it said, it went from $10,000, which they thought it was $100. That's all, every time it was played was $100. So I think I'm doing the right thing. And I go to WCW and I said, listen, it's great news. It's only $100. It's not $10,000. And they look at me like I have three heads and then get angry. I mean, their faces got contorted like, how do you know this? And I said, well, I got the contract. That right there gave me a three-month vacation. They sent me home immediately, and I took a three-month vacation because they were pissed off at me. And I'm like, I thought I was doing the right thing. But then I came back on TV, and it was interesting because there was an article written that they were shocked. Somebody, I can't remember, Bill Banks maybe or somebody said, we're shocked that the more we beat him, he's still getting over. So when I came back and Bischoff came in and Russo and the guy that really I will give the most amount of credit for pushing this gimmick is Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart had us, he was running the Saturday night shows. Right. And Jimmy Hart, you know, Jimmy's like, I love that gimmick, baby. This is a great gimmick. I'm going to push it, baby. And I love Jimmy to this day. What a great dude. So he was trying to, he took over that WCW Saturday night show with all the young talent and was pushing us. And that's when, you know, they started to really understand. They saw that I could do the gimmick, that I was a huge fan of the band and Gene. And then they started putting me in those feuds. And I remember having a main event match. Brian was in it. Brian, the Chronic was in it with, do you remember this, Brian? It was me, Vampiro, Muda, and Jeff Jarrett versus Chronic, Sting, and Booker T. And it was in Terre Haute, Indiana. And we were the main event. And you guys got disqualified for putting the referee through the table. And then Jeff Jarrett bails on us.
Chronic?
Yeah. Can you
We wouldn't do anything like that.
No, that never, from? Never.
That's a regular never, Tuesday morning, never. Right?
What the hell?
Yeah, and so we did that main event, and I remember that Terre Haute Arena was rocking. And I remember after that match, Booker T sat me down. And he goes, "Hey, your career is about to change here," because he goes, "You showed you could hang with the big dogs," and he goes, "It's about to change." Yeah, but unfortunately, it didn't, and changed in that you know, it was like, again, people fell out of power, and then I was pushed back, and they, you know, it was basically, here, you go away. And that was kind of how that whole thing was, like a pinball, was bang, bang, bang. And like, somebody liked it, somebody didn't. We're going to bury him. No, we're going to push him. No, it's done. And I was like,
I've had that. When you mentioned about that 3-month vacation, we had an MTV Battle Royal, and I got one of those 3-month vacations because, some differences of opinion. Let me ask you this. So following the Bash of the Beach pay-per-view, you turned heel, aligning yourself with Vampiro, Great Muda, and ICP to be part of the Dark Carnival, right? Mm-hmm. So you got your chance to work a loop, even a pay-per-view, I think, with Sting. Tell me about your experiences and what you thought about working with the Icon.
My gosh. I don't know if we have enough time to tell you all, but I will.
Just give us your feel of what you thought in the ring, because I've worked with him many times, and I'm just curious of what you thought also.
A beauty. I mean, he taught me so much that I can't even, you know. I think anybody that's a wrestling fan or been in the business understands when you're first getting started. You memorize from minute one to minute 10, right? You're memorizing. You start to become robotic sometimes because you're trying to remember everything because you're green, right? And you're listening to the veterans in the power plant saying, you know, you got to listen to the crowd. You got to do this. You got to be able to call this, and you got to do this and this. And I remember somebody had said, you will not understand. You're not seasoned until you're 5 years into the business. And I remember sitting there going, 5 years, like, I know the moves, I can do this. Boy, did something clicked with Sting. It was in Evansville, Indiana. And I have a match and it's a house show. And Sting did something to me that freaked me out, but ended up being the most amazing life wrestling lesson I've ever had. And again, my mind, I'm wrestling Sting. This, you couldn't have gotten any bigger at that point, right? Sting was on.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Top of the world. I mean, there was the NWO, Icon, right? And Sting can't get much bigger than that. And here I am having a match with him. It was a main event or semi-main, something like that. So I used to have great conversations with Sting when we were painting up. There's some of those memories, you know, how many people in the world get to say you painted up alongside Sting, and you know, it's just incredible. And we're talking about his family, and you know, we're talking about different things, right? So I said, do you know what you want to do tonight? You know, I'm anxious and, you know, like JoJo the Idiot Circus Boy with his pretty new pet. What do you want to do today? You know? And Sting's like, he goes, I'll think about it. You know, do your thing. I'll think about it. So I come back, I do some stuff, come back. And he's just sitting around and he's talking to Buff, Lex, and Steiner, Scott Steiner. They're all sitting just BSing, right? So I sit down and I'm listening, mouth shut, ears wide open, listening to these guys, because there's a reason you have two ears and one mouth. You know, you listen twice as much as you talk. So I'm listening to these guys and they're telling stories, and it's just, I mean, awesome to hear these guys talk, right? So they get done talking, and I said this thing, I go, do you know what we want to do tonight? He goes, I'm thinking about it. He goes, I'll get back with you. I mean, it's creeping closer and closer. I mean, the matches are going on at this point, you know, where for this house show, there's, you know, the first two matches are already finished, you know? So Sting ends up going, hey, go put your paint on. And when you come back, I'll know what we're going to do. I said, okay, I paint up, come in. He doesn't have his paint on. He goes, let me paint up and come back. I'll know what we're going to do. We're inching up. It's like intermission is already, I'm like, oh man, like what are we doing? I'm getting nervous, you know? So I think we're like two matches away. And Sting goes, all right, I know what we're going to do. I said, okay, you know, ears over. Okay, what? He goes, you know the finish? Yes. Okay. Well, see you out there, and slaps me on the back. And I'm like, what? And he goes, listen. He goes, I'm going to call it in the ring. Just listen. You'll be fine. Okay. We go out there, circle up. Sting says something to the ref, and ref goes, circle up one more time, lock up, and here we go. Circle one more time, locked up, and Sting goes, just listen, here we go. And we went through this, going bang, 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 through the whole thing. It was the most enjoyable match that I had had, because it just was, you know, A, it's with an icon. He was unbelievable. You didn't feel a thing. He was light as, you didn't feel anything. And it looked like $1 million. Go through, come back through the curtain after, and he says, how do you feel? I said, man, I go, that was great. He goes, let me ask you something. He goes, did you hear the crowd? I said, I did. He goes, did you feel like free? And I said, yeah. He goes, because you weren't locked up in your head going A to B to C to D to D to D to D to D. Okay, this spot going here. He goes, you weren't paying attention to any of that. You listen to the crowd. He goes, what happens now for you guys is if the crowd takes a dump all over your match and they don't like what you're doing, you don't have the skill set to flip it on a dime to go, now what are we doing? You're going to go through until the match is over. Hey, the crowd didn't get behind it, so be it. He goes, that's not a true professional wrestler. A true professional listens to the crowd, can turn on a dime and flip it and call it in the ring. And I remember sitting there just going, wow, like this is what it means. This is what it's about. And this is, now I understand what they're talking about, of understanding the psychology in a match, of going, understanding, like you put it in those terms of Rocky, you know, of watching them tell that story in the ring, you know, a nonverbal story in the ring and understanding it. Got it. Calling it ring. Got it. Listen to the crowd. Got it. That was such a huge wrestling life lesson. And I will tell you, I love Sting to this day. What a superhuman being. What people don't actually realize is some of the music from AEW, they went through me. I got a call from Sting when we were, he was doing that show in London, and it's Seek and Destroy. And I was getting these calls, and I'm like, it was like 1 o'clock in the 10 a.m. maybe, but it's inching closer to showtime. they thought they had rights to the music, and they didn't. So I ended up getting on the phone. I called Metallica's management again, and we were able to fast track it. And hence, that's how Seek and Destroy happened. You know, my buddies from the band Alter Bridge, Edge uses their music. It's because I introduced Adam to, you know, the guys in Alter Bridge. And then the rest is history.
Wow. What connections, man. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I love
that. That's the Forrest Gump in me. And I hate to, if you need to cut me off, just give me the signal. But
it's great. No, these are great stories. The fans are going to love this.
All right. Well, we talked about how it's the Forrest Gump type of thing that, you know, literally buddies are talking about Gump. So when we talked about the MVP gimmick, right?
Yep.
And I said it was the Warriors was what it was based on. I was doing a fantasy camp for the Cleveland Indians, and they were based out of Winter Haven. We go eat dinner. And this, I had done a photo shoot of, in the MVP gimmick at this baseball field, you know, on the mound and, you know, on the field. And we did a really cool photo shoot. So I had some of the pictures from the photo shoot. We go to a Shell's seafood place in Winter Haven. So we're eating and all that. And the manager of this seafood place comes up and said, "Hey, you know, how was your meal tonight? Blah, blah." And I said, "Oh, it was great." All that. And he goes, "Oh, that's terrific." And he sees one of the pictures on the table. He goes, "What is that?" I said, "Oh, it's a wrestling gimmick that I'm working on and all that." And he goes, "That looks like the Warriors." He goes, "Have you ever seen the movie The Warriors?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, heck yeah." I'm like, "That's where it came from." I said, "A Baseball Fury." And he goes, "You're not going to believe this." He goes, pulls out his business card, and he goes, "I was one of the Baseball Fury in a movie." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me. There's like 7 or 8 of those guys in the world, and I meet him at a Winter Haven Shell's seafood place." I mean, completely, completely bizarre. I mean, it's just, it's hard to make that stuff up.
It was serendipity. It was meant to be. It was a happy coincidence, yeah. And all planets have aligned. From icons in paint like Sting and Vampiro to the Kiss Demon, we've come to that point in our show that everybody loves. It's our highest rated segment, and we're going to find out right now who is going to go over as it's time to play Winner Stays On. Dale Torborg, are you ready? Because today it's Winner Stays On. Best face paint in pro wrestling. I'm going to give you two names. You're going to tell me who stays and goes over and who takes the loss and gets replaced with another name.
Oh, boy.
Do you want to do a few lunges? Are we set and ready to go? Stretch it out, brother. Let's do this.
This is going to be fun.
I got you.
All right, okay. Two names. We're going to start with Papa Shango or Vampiro.
I gotta go with Vamp. I love working Vamp. So I'm going with Vamp.
Voodoo Curse has been put over the Godfather. Vampiro or Gold Dust?
Oof. Still gotta go with Vamp. I love Dustin, but going with Vamp.
The curtain has fell on Gold Dust. Vampiro.
Well, you gotta remember too, Vamp had two different makeups. He had the Insane Clown Posse one, and then he had the Misfits. So he's got two different ones. Okay. So go ahead.
I like it. Okay. Vamp or Jeff Hardy? He's had many different makeup designs.
Artistic. For artistic reasons, Jeff Hardy.
Vampiro goes down. That's the nail in his coffin. Jeff Hardy. Right. And we're going to go faster with these, Dale. We're going to go faster. Jeff Hardy or Danhausen?
Jeff Hardy.
Jeff Hardy or Darby Allin?
Jeff Hardy.
Jeff or Asuka?
Ooh. Jeff Hardy.
He's on a roll.
He is. He's on a roll. Jeff Hardy or Kamala?
Jeff Hardy.
Jeff Hardy or the Demon Finn Balor?
Finn Balor.
Oh, yeah, took a swanton. Finn Balor or MVP?
MVP.
Yes, brother.
That's it. He goes.
I've got to put myself over.
We own that gimmick. MVP or the Great Muta?
Muta.
Ah, oh, he took the loss. Muta or the Boogeyman?
Muta.
Muta or Demolition?
Muta.
Muta or the Ultimate Warrior?
Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior or Sting?
Sting.
Sting or the Road Warriors?
Sting.
Sting or the Kiss Demon?
Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
he's the originator, so I'm going with Gene.
Oh, with Gene. Throw that song down, brother. We've gone for the big win. Love it. Oh, amazing. Thank you for playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody loves a good winner stays on. And we went over. I think right now, Brian, I think we're pretty much even with our guests that have gone over.
Yep.
And our guests that have taken a very, very short-lived loss right at the end. They're like, no, I can't do it. They let them have it.
I gotta go with my idol. I gotta go with Gene. So Gene's gotta be the tops. He's a king of the mountain.
Yeah. Well, that list was amazing. You got some all-time greats in there, some current superstars. So you had a big variety, and of course, Gene coming out on top. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Right.
It's got it. Yeah. I'll tell you what. I mean, I love that's one thing. Jeff Hardy's so ridiculously creative. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And some of the old school legends, Ultimate Warrior, of course, he always had some great makeup, gear.
Yeah.
His gear was always top. So listen, I want to ask you a couple of things here before we head out. One thing I caught this on another interview, and I wanted to ask you this because we have a big time fan, big time supporter out of Mesa, Arizona, and he wanted to know about how many, I think you have over 40 signed guitars. How about just give me, is that correct? Over 40?
I think it's up to 53 now.
Okay. How about giving me your top five out of that? By the way, this is for Aaron Spaulding out of Mesa, Arizona, big time supporter of the Meltdown. Here you go.
Well, I appreciate the question, Aaron. You're saying my top five or
you have such amazing, the collection's great. So just that you like.
In some ways it's an eclectic, but got to go with Gene Simmons gave me one of his axe bases. That's number one. I've got to go with that. Ozzy Osbourne and Zakk Wylde on a Purple Flying V.
Wow.
I mean, it's my Northwestern Colors on written in silver. And Ozzy was I met him, was just such a kind, seemed like such a kind soul and was soft-spoken. And so that's one that's amazing. I have Mark Tremonti from Creed and Alter Bridge gave me one of his models, which is ridiculous. Wow. Oh my gosh, I have so many. I have Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood. Garth was amazing to my family and me.
That's Hall of Famers right there. He's gonna love hearing this. This is a clip within itself right here.
I got Metallica, a couple rundowns, Megadeth. Full sign Creed. Luke Bryan, I can't even right now. I can't even think. Seven Dust. I have two of their touring guitars from John Connolly and Vinny. I've got one of, here's one that's really cool. When I learned to breathe fire, it was at WCW did it to me again. Told me on a Friday I needed to learn to breathe fire for Monday. That was a pleasant experience. Went to Jones Beach, New York. Gene and his assistant Spiro taught me how to breathe fire. But I have the guitar that Paul Stanley broke on stage at that Jones Beach sign. So I've got a really cool collection. But the number one has to be I have the original four members of Kiss signed on a BC Rich, Bitch is what it's called, black It's Black Guitars. It's incredible. It's an awesome one.
Man, our listeners are going to love to hear that. And my little poor Lou Graham signed album over here. He doesn't even compare. So sorry, Lou. We did what we could.
Aaron is going to love that. I know my son, Charlie, he's going to love hearing about that. He's a massive rock and roll fan.
Yes.
He got to hang out with Ozzy Osbourne the week before he passed. And that means the world to him. So I will definitely be playing this clip to Charlie. But what an amazing collection. You got 53 signed guitars. Christy, you're a trooper.
Yeah, she has one. I got her. She was a big fan of Def Leppard. So I got Def Leppard to sign a guitar for her. And the very first photo shoot I ever did as the Demon was in Atlanta, and Megadeth was playing. It was like, it was either the House of Blues or did the photo shoot and I got to hang out with Megadeth. And that was the start of the collection. The first sign guitar was Megadeth. And it's just grown from there.
Well, our listeners are going to love to hear that, man. Dale, I want to just thank you. I mean, for you taking the time to talk to us today and our listeners and working with the Tomcat today, again, taking the time out of your busy schedule to visit with us. And, my friend, you are always welcome back anytime, man. We are High Road Productions. We take it on the high road. We keep it, we try to have a good time and keep it positive, man. Thank you so much for being a part of that today.
Absolutely, man. I loved it. I really enjoyed both of you guys with the positivity and letting people kind of tell their stories in their own words is what it's about sometimes. And I give you a ton of respect, in my career. You guys were, ahead of us and, looked to as you weren't old, but you were veterans to us. And to have you guys kind of literally never look down at us and always, hey, try this or do this. And to have that, and guys with the pedigree that you had with the Atom Bomb gimmick, and I love the Wrath gimmick, and and Mortis was one of the greatest examples of a mistake of not pushing that. That was one of the coolest gimmicks, and you guys together. I mean, I wish mine actually was in a different era, a few years earlier, and it would have been even more gangbusters because it was such a cool time. And thank you for always being there as to be able to talk to, and you guys were top notch. And I thank you for that. And I thank you guys for doing this. And again, being so positive with everybody and letting us tell our stories in our own words.
It's what it's all about. He is the MVP. He is the Demon. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Meltdown, it's Dale Torborg. Wow. What an incredible guest it was to have the Demon MVP, the first MVP, rocking it in with us. Dale Torborg, a round of applause to you, good sir. Thank you so much for the most incredible, positive conversation here on The Meltdown. Well, we've got something very, very special lined up for you guys next week. We may have divulged a little bit last week, but next week is going to be a big one because we are going to open up that Meltdown mailbag because we've got a smorgasbord of questions to pose to the creation of Devastation. So, you've got a week. Get those questions all in. We'll add a few more on. It's Ask Brian Anything. Get those messages in. You can hit us up at Instagram at The Meltdown Official, or you can drop us some little messages on Facebook, on TikTok, on X. You can find us. He is at Real Brian Clark or at Brian Clark 3X Champ on Instagram. Or you can find me at Tom Finkill. But what a wonderful show. I'm going to bat it over to the AZ to close off another epic, epic episode as we round out number 18. Brian, finish it off as we give you the tick, 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 a boom.
That was a fantastic show, peeling back the layers of the demon character, the MVP character. Just a great positive show with Dale Torborg. And I'm really happy that we got to spend some quality time with him today. I think our listeners are going to love it. Our listeners who are rock fanatics, fans who, I mean, you wait till you hear some of the guitar collected signed collectibles he has. I mean, he has some of everything. And again, we had it all captured today. So make sure you take a listen. And also next week, Meltdown Mailbag, which means you can ask me anything. I'll try to answer it. I may take the high road if I have to. So keep it clean, but we love you. Can't wait to see you next week. Big time Meltdown Mailbag. And again, doing what we do best, breaking necks and cashing checks.
A boom.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.